Jeremy Renner returns to Paramount Plus for a brand new season of the original hit series, Mayor of Kingstown.
My job is to create a balance, avoid a war.
From executive producer Taylor Sheridan, co-creator of Yellowstone.
There's some new players in town, and they brought the plague.
And Antoine Fuqua, director of Training Day.
I know it's always been a war zone, Mike, but this is next level.
The mayor is back in business.
Are you warning me? You're going to find out.
Mayor of Kingstown, new season streaming June 2nd, exclusively on Paramount Plus.
New CBS Monday. NCIS is back.
We need all hands on deck.
So grab your gear.
NCIS!
And join our elite team.
What are the charges?
Murder.
New cases to be solved.
Double tap to the chest.
Same caliber as the murder weapon.
And new criminals to catch.
That's the bomb maker. Where's the bomb?
A new NCIS, Monday, 9, 8 Central, on CBS and streaming on Paramount Plus.
First Cut. Golly.
Welcome to the First Cut Podcast. I'm Rick Gaiman, and this is your Saturday recap for this week's WGC Dell Technologies Match Play. Joining me to go match by match through this bracket, it is Patrick McDonald. Hello, Patrick.
Rick, what's going on, my man? Excited to go match by match with you. It was a long day out there. The dudes golfed their golf ball well. Some winning golf out there, a little losing golf out there as well, but really excited to talk to you.
Yes, 36 holes for the guys who advanced out of the Sweet 16. So we went from 16 to 8 and then 8 to 4 today. So we've got 4 remaining for another long day of golf on Sunday, and here is how we got there. The number one player in the world, Scottie Scheffler, battled JT Poston this morning in the Sweet 16. And while Scottie Scheffler got off to a great start, he was 2 up through 5. It was quickly the JT Poston show. He took the lead on 8. He was 2 up on the 15th tee, Patrick, and then Scottie Scheffler goes birdie, birdie, birdie on 15, 16, 17, and all it took was a par on 18 to win the match 1 up and advance to the Elite Eight.
The par really, the match really flipped there on the par 5-6 when, remember that one year when, was it Rory who found the swimming pool in that backyard?
Yes, that's right.
Yeah, it was that hole. So obviously the concession there and then a couple bogeys, and all of a sudden JT Poston is 1 up at 10, or matches all squared after 9. And then, gosh, the up and down challenge kind of on the par 5 12th there, that Poston got the better of Scheffler. But I said it a little bit in the green room. You have the world number one on the ropes. He goes first. He hits his iron first. You have a potential to have an advantage, and you lay back. I'm a diehard Steelers fan. I have been my entire life. Matt Canada has been our offensive coordinator for the past couple of years. He loves the draw play, and it was just losing football what JT Poston did out there today on 18. You got a mash driver down there. You're the data guy, Rick. The numbers back it up. You hit driver. The scoring average is substantially lower. And he decides to hit iron, and then a poor wedge shot on top of that. And he doesn't even, you know, really scare Scheffler on the 18th. He completely bailed him out with that bogey. But hat tip to Scotty. He's just tee to greening these guys to death. He's always in a hole. He doesn't really seem to give one to them outside that OB shot on 6. And yeah, 1 up, and that was a fantastic match. I just wish Poston played 18 differently.
Had the number one player in the world on the ropes, but Scottie Scheffler survives, advances to the Elite Eight. The other half of this region was a couple of savvy vets, Jason Day and Matt Kuchar. Another tight one here. The first 4 holes all halved before Jason Day started to build a little bit of a lead. But Patrick, they were on 16T, all square. It ends up with Jason Day making a birdie on 16 and holding off Kuchar for the rest of the match. Jason Day advances with a 1-up victory.
The back nine here was a bit of a pillow fight on 11 there. You see a pair of bogeys. Kuchar hit it in the water first. Then Jason Day follows suit, because that's totally what you're supposed to do in match play and not just air long on the side of caution. And it honestly felt like from that moment on that Kuchar got the momentum. He won 13 with a birdie. tied up that match, but missed a 7-footer there on the par five and ultimately was not able to get it done. They both hit driver down 18. I do know that Kuchar had a weird, weird lie from 50 yards, but you know what they did? They both made par. And that would have been good enough for JT Poston. I'm over it now. I'm done talking about JT.
That's okay. You can keep berating him. That's fine. Scotty Scheffler and Jason Day meet in the Elite Eight. Let's just continue down the path here because this one was a doozy. Lots of circles on the card. It was Jason Day that got out to an early lead. And in fact, Scotty Scheffler did not lead this match at all until the 13th hole. I count 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 birdies for Scotty Scheffler while I count, what is that, 3 plus 3, 6 birdies and an eagle for Jason Day. Lots of firepower here, but no surprise. Scotty Scheffler does it again, finds a way to get through a 2-1 victory to advance to the final four.
This one was like slowly watching your own death for me personally with the one and done selection of Jason Day.
You went the furthest though. You got the furthest guy.
Yeah, that is key. And you heard him talk to Damon Hack about it. Just kind of take the punches from Jason Day from holes 3 through 5 where he played them in 4-under, grab the 3-up lead. And the big exchange, I think, was that 30-footer on 9. For Scotty to roll that one first before Day, head into the back nine, only one down, made the birdie on 12. Day kind of made a mess of 13 there. And gosh, I mean, Jason Day really, the 7-footer on 10 he could have made. He had the line from Scotty Scheffler on the par 3 11th as well. He left that one short. And then he kind of gave Scotty a few holes there at 14 in particular. But that final shot on 17, the near hole in one to walk off, that would have been Jonathan Bird-esque. I bet you didn't think we'd get a Jonathan Bird shout out today.
No, but every time I play TPC Summerlin, there's a plaque there on 17 where he knocked it in. So I honestly think about Jonathan Bird all the time. So I will say that, yeah, so two birdies on 17, that's very generous, good for Jason Day because Scotty Scheffler nearly holed out for an ace to walk it off. He was like 2 inches away. So that will get Scotty to the final four, but can we just hat tip Jason Day right now? 770K, playing some of the best golf we've seen for him in a long time. This dude's grooving.
Yeah, he looks really good. He was throwing darts out there today. I mean, he made eagle on the par 5-6 both times. He played in 6 strokes. I bet there's someone out there today who bogeyed the hole. He tied him in his two strolls around it, but he looks really good. And I think the thing that kind of sticks out to me is after yesterday's round, he said he wasn't fully comfortable with his swing yet. And you kind of see it with the rehearsal. He's rehearsing during his practice swing there where it's not quite in the slot, not quite where he wants it. And it appears every now and again. He hit it in the hazard on 3, I believe, a little snap hook there. And the wedge on 14 was deep as well, long and left. So there's still ways to go for Jason Day, who still believes he can get back to world number one. We've heard him talk about missing that feeling of sleeping close to the lead. You know, he enjoys not being able to sleep on Saturday nights, knowing he has a potential to win a championship. But I'm in, obviously, Augusta's around the corner. That's what everyone has their eyes on. Jason Day has a great history there. But Rick, I'll pose this question to you. He hasn't really contended in stroke play tournaments. He's had great finishes. He hasn't really contended. This should help him out, correct?
Yeah, I think so. You get the juices flowing. You go up against the number one player in the world. You battle him. I mean, he came out of a very difficult group. Yeah, I think that there's the competitive juices were probably flowing more this week than some of those, yeah, like backdoor T9s and T12s and stuff like that.
Yeah.
The next region, this would be the call it the Patrick Cantlay region because he was the highest seed in that region. Starts with Sam Burns and Patrick Cantlay this morning in the Sweet 16. This was a fun one. Very tight throughout. All square through 6 holes before Patrick Cantlay won hole number 7. Sam Burns squared this thing up on number 10 and took a lead on 11, and he did not look back, Patrick. Sam Burns goes 2-1 over Patrick Cantlay in a, I suppose it's a little upset when the 13 seed beats the 4 seed.
Yeah, a little bit, especially with the way Cantlay's been playing, and Burns hasn't had his best stuff outside the Valspar this year. But in that front 9, it felt like Cantlay should have been 2 or 3 up. He just let a few holes get away from him. And then you see the bogey on 10 was kind of sloppy, hits it in the water on 11, and kind of just gifts Sam Burns the lead there. And Burns didn't let up, to his credit. Really big birdie there on 14, which, you know, kind of saw some action today. It's a sneaky hole. You lose it among the 12, 13, 16 is a great hole. And, you know, keep an eye on 14. And then the must make putt that from Cantlay on the 16th, the 10 footer for Eagle, was just, I mean, nails. And then he kind of just hit his birdie putt on 17 a bit too hard. But it's Sam Burns is tough to play against. He hits it really long and he makes a crap load of putts,
They're both tough to play against. They probably didn't even say a word to each other all day long.
No. And I know Cantlay, he hasn't really been putting it as the Cantlay we've come to know. So I think that was probably the ultimate decider in this one.
The upset of the day was very early this morning. The 50th seed, Mackenzie Hughes, beats the 5th seed, Max Homa. Homa was the first to draw blood in this match. A birdie on number 4 to take a 1-up lead, but a quick bounce back from Hughes to square the match on number 5. And then wins. That's the first of 3 consecutive holes that he won. So flips this to 2-up after 7, and he's able to hold on. Patrick, this is kind of weird. Listen, I had Max to win this thing before it started. He did not play particularly well to get to a 3-0 record. It was a Hideki concession, a couple of favorable draws and getting a little bit lucky in his other two matches, and then didn't play particularly well here. Mackenzie Hughes only made 3 birdies en route to this win.
Homa did not look good at all this week, and I don't know if the extra day of rest was a bad thing in hindsight.
Yeah.
A little rust there, but he made, I mean, number 1 was a 22-foot birdie putt. Number 4 was about 10 to 15 feet. And from 5 through 8, his irons were kind of atrocious. He missed short and right in each instance. And you see the lead grow for Mackenzie Hughes there. And to his credit, that par putt on 10 from kind of off the fairway, he hit his wedge long. He was in a divot in the fairway, hit it long, got up and down. It felt like maybe he turned the tide there. Stuck at his approach on 11, got it to 1 down, but he had the lefts off the tee. We saw it on 14 when he hit it in the water, 16 he hit it in the water as well, and then a little case of the rights with the irons, and was bailed out by his putter earlier in the week and a little bit today as well. So he's got a lot to work on, I think. I know a lot of people like his chances for Augusta. You think about his ball striking, the way he's putting the ball, the improvement with the around the green. A lot of big names are rising this week, and Homa, you could make the case, was kind of the most disappointing of them all.
The Cinderella story of Mackenzie Hughes gets off to a hot start in the Elite 8. He makes a long birdie putt on number 1 to get a 1-up lead over Sam Burns. He chips in on number 2 to extend it to a 2-hole lead, but Sam Burns climbs his way back into this, squares the match at number 5, takes the lead at number 7, and never gives that lead back up. Sam Burns, Patrick, punches his ticket to the final 4 to take on good bud Scottie Scheffler.
Best pals. Moment of the match by far, number 7. Burns pours one in from deep. Mackenzie's in there tight, ends up missing it, and all of a sudden Sam Burns is off and running with his lead. And like I said, I mean, Burns is just so hard to play against. He hits it out there a mile. And to Hughes's credit, he's gained a ton of distance. I was watching Shot Tracker today. It was consistently out there 320. I know they're bouncing like trampolines, those fairways, but still really impressive to see, especially a guy like Hughes who isn't the biggest guy in the world. And then 16, that chip to, you know, knock in range to earn the concession. So a lot of good stuff from Burns, and it's good to see. I know his driver was ruled non-conforming at the Genesis, I believe, and it's taken him a while to find a new driver that he likes, and it looks like he's finally found one because he's driving the golf ball great so far.
Half the bracket done. We've got the other half to go. 2 more participants in the final 4 to reveal, but first we're going to take a quick break and hear a word from our partners.
MTV's official Challenge podcast is back for another season.
And so are we.
I'm Tori Deal.
And I'm Anissa Ferreira.
The wait is over, guys. All Stars 4 is finally here.
And this season takes it to a whole new level. Old school legends, modern power players, and ex-lovers are all competing in Cape Town, South Africa for the prize of $300,000.
And we're going to be right here along with you fans, covering every episode on the podcast.
Listen to MTV's official Challenge podcast wherever you get your podcasts.
Check out our new NBA show, Beyond the Arc, part of the CBS Sports Podcast Network, where you can find me, John Gonzalez, NBA insider Bill Reiter, and Ashley Nicole Moss, 5 days a week talking all things NBA. Whether you're looking for insightful discussions, upbeat commentary, breaking news, interviews, or coverage of all the biggest stories in the NBA, our new show is the place to be 5 days a week. Download and follow Beyond the Arc on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your favorite podcasts.
And we're back. Quick programming note. I don't know if you've been paying attention, Patrick. When producer Josh started, like, what was that, a month ago? We were at 7,500 YouTube subscribers. We're now at 9,500. We're bearing down on five figures. Ooh. I attribute that literally all to Josh. So what we're trying to do is we're trying to get into that 10K area. So we are kindly asking people to subscribe, share it around. If you know anybody who might like to listen to golf or other nonsense, this would be the pod for them.
The old Josh bump.
Yes. Works every time.
Mm-hmm.
You love to see it. You know who we should get a bump from? Paul Tesori, apparently, because that dude has got a little bit of a bump. He goes on Cam Young's bag, and Cam Young refuses to lose any holes. He goes out and faces 2021 champion Billy Horschel this morning in the Sweet 16, and he did the thing again on the front nine. He played it at 5 under par. He was 5 up when he made the turn. The final score, 5-4. Cam Young's buzzsaw continued this morning.
He beat him by 9 strokes on the first 9 holes. Billy was lucky it was a match play.
Yeah.
It could have looked a lot worse. Horschel clearly didn't have his A game, and Cam Young's been a revelation this week. I think he's 32 under in his 81 holes so far. Of all the final four, definitely the least amount of stress, I would say. He's been to the 18th hole twice, but neither of those were really in jeopardy, in my opinion. So he didn't really putt that great today, and he still had 6 birdies in his first 13. So his matchup tomorrow is going to be – I know we have good friends, Sam Burns and Scottie Scheffler on one side, but if you had to pick one, I mean, the way Cameron Young's playing with Paul Tesori – on his bag.
Don't say the other name.
It would be fun to watch Cam Young.
And whoever,
that's what I was getting at.
And whoever he ends up playing.
And player X.
Player X. The other half of this region out of the Sweet 16 was also pretty low stress. Kurt Kitayama was facing off against Andrew Putnam. Kitayama won hole number one. He won hole number two. He won hole number five. He won hole number six. This thing was never out of reach for him, a massive 6-5 win, which was the biggest victory of the day.
7 birdies in 13 holes is pretty damn good. And Putnam's path to victory is just so narrow when you think about his skill set. He's not really long off the tee at all. I think he's one of the shortest hitters on the PGA Tour. And he kind of just has to catch lightning in the bottle with the putter, which he does from time to time, but obviously was not the case today. And Kitayama just rolled.
Cam Young and Kitayama in the Elite Eight combined for 13 birdies. I loved this match. This was fun. These are two guys I really liked before the tournament started. I wish they were not going to run into each other in the Elite Eight, but Kitayama gave Cam Young a scare out of the gate. He won the first hole. It was squared by number three. And then actually what happened here, Patrick, is it looked like it was going to kind of be another runaway for Cam Young. He was 3 up when they made the turn, but Kitayama did not give up here. He won holes 13 and 14, got back to one down, but could not win any of those final four holes, and it was a one-up victory for Cam Young.
I legitimately forgot this match was going on halfway through the afternoon. Young was just lulling everyone to sleep, and then they popped it back on the broadcast when he nearly made a hole in one off that ridiculously poor iron shot.
Yeah, that the difference in strokes gained on the shot that should have been versus where it ended up. If you didn't see it, it was on 11. There's this massive hill on the left hand side. He hits the top of the hill. It almost goes over the hill. It's almost like 40 yards away from the hole. Trickles all the way down, rolls to the lip, almost drops, and he just sits there on the lip.
Absolutely ridiculous. And to Kitayama's credit,
yes,
you know, he laughed it off. They're laughing on the tee box, and he drained 15, 20 footer for birdie to have the hole. And from there, it kind of gave him a boost. You see it with a couple birdies there on 13 and 14 to get it to one up. He hits the green and two on 16. And then Young hit a piss miss one there for a second too. He's been doing that all week on 16. And unfortunately he kind of was a bit sloppy on 18 for him to really give Young a scare, but it's crazy to think Kurt Kitayama is a top 20 player in the world, but he is.
Sure is. Okay. So we've got Cam Young out of that region. Three out of four of our final four are set. Let's get you our final participants early this morning. Rory McIlroy kind of had his hands full with Lucas Herbert. That pesky little Herbie would not go away. He never led Herbert, that is, in this match. Rory won the first hole. They were squared up for one hole on number six. But Rory ends up winning two up, but a pretty valiant effort from Herbert, who was obviously overpowered.
Herbie fully loaded, some would say.
Some would.
but yeah, Rory had, nine birdies in his first match. Really couldn't do no wrong. And that included a miss from inside 3 feet on the 13th. He just completely whiffed a putt, didn't even touch the hole. But similar to Burns, Herbert's extremely long off the tee, and he was number one in strokes gained putting on the PGA Tour last year. So that's just a nightmare in match play. And you saw it on the 17th there where, okay, Rory's in tight, Herbert's 30 feet away, we're going to wrap this up, spick and span, easy enough. And Herbert pours one in. It touches, you know, every part of the hole, but finds the bottom of the cup, middle of the bottom. And similar to JT Poston, just losing football on the 18th hole.
Yeah.
There's a lot of dumb things you can do on the golf course, but you feel the most stupid when you try to do the smart thing and you mess up. He tried to lay up and he finds the fairway bunker, never gives himself a chance. Rory he smells blood in the water. Let me just blast driver down there like I've been doing all week. Hits it pin high. The hole's over after one shot. And so he played great. He needed, I think, to win this match to get into the Masters. I think he ended up coming up short with the shuffling of everything. He played great. I hate to take it away from him, but that decision on 18 to hit iron, he'll probably sleep less about it.
There was a 121-yard difference between the tee shots on 18 of Rory McIlroy and Lucas Herbert. Rory McIlroy was left with 29 yards into the green. Yes, I said that correctly. Lucas Herbert left with 131 in. So, and out of a fairway bunker. So certainly playing different games there. Rory moves on. More on him in just a second. The Cinderella story for JJ Spahn is over. He has turned back into a pumpkin. Xander Schauffele beats him 3-2 this morning.
That's the one you pull the Cinderella on, JJ Spahn.
Yeah.
The defending champion next week. Yeah, this similar to the Young match in the afternoon. This was one I kind of just forgot was going on. It you saw it from Spahn's scorecard. He played one under, didn't play that great of golf.
Yeah,
didn't make enough birdies to win a match play. So Xander, the better player over a prolonged period of time, came out.
Yeah, Spahn made two birdies in 16 holes. Not good enough against Xander Schauffele. So that sets up. How about this? Xander Schauffele and Rory McIlroy to decide who will be our fourth and final participant in the final four. And it did not disappoint. It went the distance. They were all square on the 18th tee. Xander was pretty darn good today. They made a ton of birdies, but it was Rory who Patrick only led for one tiny little moment during this match, yet it was the final moment, making birdie on 18 to steal this one away from Xander.
This was so good.
So good.
Imagine watching this match and being like, I don't want any more of this.
We need less match play.
Yeah, I'm glad this is the last year.
Dude, they had this great exchange on 17 where they're both, you know, like, I don't know, four. Let's see what Shotlink says they were. They were both 3 feet, 7 inches away. They're both standing there looking at their marks on the green. They go, and they're square at this point. And they're just like, all right, let's go decide this on 18. We're not going to have a 3.5 foot putting contest for this match.
Yeah, it was just quality golf shot after quality golf shot. I think for Xander, there's two moments that he wish he could get back. The tee shot on 13, for sure.
Hits it into the water.
Actually hits a pretty good third shot to put into like 20 feet, 25 feet. But Rory made birdie there. And then the putt on 17. He had like 10 feet after Rory airmailed the green with a wedge. Little firm. The juices might have been flowing in Shoffley's veins.
Yeah.
And you could even add a third there, the drive on 18. Rory got a pretty good bounce. Xander, not so much. He hit a pretty good second.
They both kind of hit it into the similar angles, and it kind of rattles around amongst the fans and the trees. Xander's was more under the tree than Rory's was. But yeah, he hit a pretty decent shot after that. It just did not like catch the slope that he needed it to catch.
Mm-hmm. And then Rory obviously hits it to 10-ish feet and rolls it in. And
yeah,
gosh, I mean, Rory's got everything working right now. And he's always been the most underrated chipper around the green player, just because you see him drive the golf ball and you think, holy cow, look at this guy hitting these booming tee shots like the one against Denny McCarthy. But because of that, we just forget how good he is around the greens. And then you factor in this new putter, which the putter was a bit of a problem on the West Coast. That was the only thing that kind of let him down at the Genesis. So it's, I'm not feeding into the Augusta allure. I'm not doing it. My name's not Kyle Porter. I know he's already tweeted about it, but this just feels like the perfect spot for Rory McIlroy to win the match play, come off this fantastic performance, and then shoot 76 in round one of the Masters and just blow it all up.
He made 9 birdies against Lucas Herbert this morning, and then he made another 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. 17 birdies and 1 bogey, if my mental math is correct for the day.
Correct. That includes the OB ball on 12. That's the bogey, the par 5. He bogeyed a par 5.
Yeah, too. That's sick, right?
Yeah, and he missed a 2.5 footer. He could have. He probably could have touched 20 if he really wanted to.
There you go.
Yeah. Shoots 64, 62. The 76 is coming Thursday at Augusta. He's going to blow it all up. He's going to blow it all up after this great performance.
Why would you say that?
I don't think this year's any, because I mean, I'm with you guys. I'm with you and Kyle, the optimist of the group. I gotta give it a little different flavor, you know,
a little yin to our yang.
Exactly.
Okay. Fair enough. Well, how about this? We've seen some pretty wonky final fours at this event in years past. Not so wonky this time around. One half, Scottie Scheffler versus Sam Burns. The other half, Cam Young versus Rory McIlroy. That is 4 top seeds in the final 4. Big boys only. Thick boys only. Let's talk about Scottie Scheffler. Thank you. And Sam Burns. We talked about them being good friends. Scottie seems, I mean, you said it, he's tee to greening everyone else to death. He looks phenomenal. He's the favorite. But these are both going to be fun matches.
It'll come down to Sam Burns in the putter. If he catches a hot putter, this will be a really good match. It'll come down to the wire, 17th, 18th hole type deal. But Scottie Scheffler is just way too steady from tee to green, and he's putting these greens well. We've always said it. If Scottie Scheffler is hovering around positive strokes gain putting, he's going to win the golf tournament, and he's doing that this week. So Burns has it, you know, totally up against him. He's playing with house money, in my opinion, and he's got to feel good. The one time they went head-to-head against each other, Burns won in the playoff at the Charles Schwab Challenge when he rolled in that putt off the green. when Scheffler let that one slip away. So they're good friends, obviously. They've played a ton of golf with each other, but I wouldn't be surprised if it goes down to 17 or 18, especially if Burns catches a hot putter.
Burns and Scottie Scheffler on one side, Cam Young and Rory McIlroy on the other. Both have filled it up all week long. Both are going to use their driver as a weapon. The odds makers assign Rory McIlroy as with the second shortest odds to win the whole thing, not just this match against Cam Young. But boy, this is like I'm stoked for both of these matches, but just inject Rory and Cam Young straight into my veins.
People often forget that it was not Rory McIlroy who finished runner-up at the Open Championship. Cameron Young.
That's right.
With that 72nd hole eagle. So McIlroy might have a little bad blood.
Oh,
I'm joking, obviously.
You're thinking, no. You're thinking that, hey, I can't get that other Cam. He doesn't play here anymore. I'm going to get this one instead.
Mm-hmm, exactly. So maybe it's a pseudo Open Championship for him. But the way this is going to come down to who putts better. We say it every week for, you know, prognosticating tournaments, but you see the way Rory's rolling the rock currently, and Cam has been suspect this season. I know he has Paul Tesori on the bag this week, but he didn't putt great against Kitayama this afternoon. So you would expect Rory to not roll in this one, but take care of Cam Young and potentially set up a rematch of the 2022 Tour Championship.
Oh, yes. I've forgotten. I'm holding both a pre-tournament Scottie Scheffler and Cam Young ticket. But I'll tell you what, I might forego a 35 to 1 Cam Young ticket to see Scottie Scheffler play Rory McIlroy. Because here's the other thing that I want. I want Scottie Scheffler and Rory McIlroy to play in the finals, and I want it to go 30 holes with them making 29 birdies each and just being like, how are you not entertained? How are we not doing this constantly and have like this unbelievably successful final where people will be begging for match play?
Monahan will pull up in a pontoon boat on the Colorado River. He'll jump off it, swim to 13 green.
Yep.
He'll be like, okay, folks, we're coming back. Not leaving.
We're not leaving. Try to get us out of here. Yeah. Or what if Rory – see, what might be even more powerful is Rory goes out, shoots like a 56, wins this thing, and he just declares that it's back on the schedule for next year. And then like Jay's got to make it happen somewhere, right? Like Rory speaks for everybody. Rory speaks everything into existence. Just let him announce it.
He could just say his company with Tiger is now the new presenting sponsor.
Yeah, why not?
Yeah, and there you have it.
The match play brought to you by TGL, or brought to you by Tomorrow.
Yeah, what are you going to do, Jay? What are you going to do?
I love it. All right, any final thoughts before? I mean, who do you think is going to win this thing? Just give me a pick to win.
I'm going to go with Scottie Scheffler. And if Scottie Scheffler wins, he will have won 12 matches in a row. Which is one short of the all-time record held by Tiger Woods, who has 13, and he will not have an opportunity to pass him. How sad is that?
It's so insane to win 12 matches in a row.
Ridiculous.
My head says Scotty wins. My heart says Rory wins. My bank account says Cam Young wins.
Okay. So let's operate under the assumption McIlroy wins. Storylines heading into Augusta.
Oh, they will be full throttle.
Is it ahead of Tiger? Is it ahead of Phil's return?
Yo, dude, I mean, Phil's obviously playing, right? Like, I completely forgot about Phil. Mm-hmm.
Didn't play last year.
Phil's return will be pretty massive.
Mm-hmm.
No, it will not be bigger than those two because we've had full throttle Rory going into the Masters, trying to complete the career Grand Slam for like 10 years. So no, I don't think it'll be anything different. I think that there is always some level of massive hype for Rory, but when you've got the cat there and it's going to be the cat and Phil and all those other live guys, that's at least going to be the story early in the week.
Yeah. Okay. Probably number one playing storyline.
Oh like yeah.
Actual golf.
The actual sport, but everything else. Yeah. No, there'll be different combos. All right, cool. We've got four down to two down to one on Sunday. We will be back after it is all said and done to recap just a few more matches along the way. Big thanks, producer Josh, does all the hard work behind the scenes. Patrick McDonald can be found on Twitter at Amateur Status, and you can find me at Rick Rungood. This has been The First Cut. We'll catch you next time.
Paramount Plus and the National Park Foundation present A Mountain of Zen. Are you still listening? Good. Take a deep breath. You needed a break. This Earth Week, you can live stream seven national parks for 7 days on Paramount Plus. So, yes, you can literally stream a stream. Paramount Plus, official streaming partner of the National Park Foundation.